And it's the record on KUOW with Steve Scherer. I'm David Hyde. According to the U.S. government, 16% of high school students grades 9 through 12 were electronically bullied in 2011. That's just one of the technological dangers potentially facing kids. There's also online predators. There's sexting. If you read the papers, if you see TV news, you've heard about these stories. But our guest today says the dangers have been exaggerated. It's time to take the science fiction goggles off and figure out what teenagers are actually up to. Dana Boyd spent 8 years studying and talking to 160 teenagers to research her new book. It's called It's Complicated, The Social Lives of Networked Teens. She's also a principal researcher at Microsoft, a fellow at Harvard, and a researcher at NYU. Dana Boyd, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So cyberbullying is one of these topics that it's a hot button issue. Parents get exercised about it, and you take it on in this book. Everyone's heard about it. What's the fear, and then what's the reality?
Yeah. You know, it's very funny. Very rarely do researchers and people have the same definition of something. And the irony for me about bullying is that young people's definitions of bullying is very aligned with academics' definitions, which is completely disconnected with the general public's conversation about bullying. Normally in the public, we talk about, you know, bullying to refer to every aspect of meanness and cruelty, from teasing to serious forms of criminal harassment. Whereas young people and researchers talk about it more as psychological, physical, or social aggression repeated over time by people of differential physical or social power. This is the big kid picking on the little kid, the cool kid picking on the geek. And the reason that that's important is that what plays out online isn't necessarily always under the contours of bullying. It's often more under the contours of a whole variety of meanness and cruelty. And so when adults jump online and they see these traces of meanness and cruelty, they often choose who the victim is and who the perpetrator is without understanding the social dynamics. And it's really unfortunate because that misunderstanding means that we don't do the right interventions. Now, the irony is that if you stabilize that definition of bullying, we have not seen a rise of bullying over the last 30 years, which is usually very shocking to people. Even with the internet, when we survey young people now, they continue to report that bullying is far worse at school, with greater emotional duress, with greater consequences. And so what's the difference? What the difference is that usually you don't get to see this. When your child comes home with a black eye, you know something went on in school. But if he comes home grouchy, you don't know what's up. Online, we see everything and we don't always understand what we see.
Mm. And I'm sure that resonates with a lot of parents. They see the grumpy kid, they're like nodding their heads right now. But on the other hand, they're also probably saying, yeah, but in the old days, if I got bullied or I had an experience at school that made me feel sort of anxious because it was just active meanness or cruelty, when I got home, you know, the home is sort of a haven from the heartless world. I didn't have all this mean stuff getting piped in through the internet. So what's changed? What's different now with this online world for teens?
So this is precisely why we assumed that the internet would make things so much worse and why we were surprised by the data. And what I started to realize is that just like we see these traces and the meanness can continue into the home environment, so can the support. So what we see is that young people are also reaching out when they see this meanness and saying, hey, I still love you. And this is actually where we get a really weird twist to what happens online, which is that, you know, we're starting to see these anonymous forums where we see these traces of things that look like they're tremendously miserable, things like ask.fm. When in fact, we start to untangle this and we find out that young people are being mean to themselves anonymously in order to elicit support and love from their peers. And that complicates our entire picture of what we think we see. And so this is where it's all messy. This is not to say that bullying is not a significant issue. It's a tremendously important issue to address. But if we just focus on the visible online, if we just focus on the digital, we miss the whole thing. We miss what's really going on, and we don't have an opportunity to really address the underlying issues. And that's why I want us to not get so obsessed with the technology and deal with the, you know, the fundamental aspects of meanness and cruelty.
Another topic that you write about that's kind of sensational is sexting. It's all over the TV news, probably for that reason. What did you find about the realities of sexting, or at least the perspective of teens about sexting?
I saw, you know, the conversation around sexting occurred, you know, a couple of years ago as the sort of height of it. And there was this anxiety that young people must be sharing all of these sexualized images. And in fact, most young people I'd encountered were not. Now, that said, there were definitely some that were. And I'd hear some really interesting responses, which would be things like, well, you know, isn't this a form of safe sex? Why are people getting upset about this? It's like, they tell me I'm not supposed to have sex, but, you know, here's a situation where I can't get pregnant. And I'm like, on one hand, I get it. But the reputational issues are much more complicated than that. So we yell at young people because they're engaged in these sexual image productions. But then, of course, ironically, when you look at the numbers, it's adults who are sending a lot more sexualized images, including our elected officials. Mm-hmm. And so it's this really challenging aspect, because it's like, how do we address sexuality and the sexualized image culture that we live in? And so what I see is that these young people are very much reproducing what's around them. And if we don't like that, we need to address the societal issues. We can't just go after teens, because they see the hypocrisy everywhere.
Mm-hmm. There's hypocrisy. There's also parents' concerns about their kids' images getting out there and how this is going to hurt their reputations. Maybe it's going to hurt their job prospects. That's part of why all this anxiety seems to exist. And you also write about the question of privacy and how much parents are sort of surveilling now and checking up on their kids online. What did you learn about that?
So privacy is one of those funny pits, because we want young people to be caring about privacy, but we want to have the right to assert, you know, control over what they do online. And we see a lot of adults engaging in surveillance. And it's this really weird conflict, and teens will be very quick to tell you it's a very strange thing. What happened, this was probably the area where things changed the most over the decade in which I was doing this work. At the beginning, I could go online and I could see their material and I could interpret it, and it was relatively visible. You know, as time progressed, young people became much more sophisticated at finding ways to make it less visible. And they did it through a couple of different strategies. One was using the technology. They would go and they would lock things down. They would make protected accounts on Twitter, or they would, you know, jump onto Instagram as a sort of private space. But more notably, they realized that, you know, no matter what they did of the online settings, their parents would look over their shoulders. And that's where things got interesting, is that they would stop trying to think about restricting access to content and more try to think about restricting access to meaning. And so what you'd see is these encoded messages, these song lyrics, these pronoun uses, ways of hiding in plain sight. And what you realize is that young people care about trying to control the social situation, which is different than trying to control information flows.
It's interesting, because young people have always done that through jargon, through
Absolutely.
Youth culture. So parents aren't that successful at spying on their kids. But what I'm wondering about is just sort of big picture, how new is this universe? There's increased anxiety on the part of parents about this new media. And it seems like, you know, from one parental perspective, it's kind of like, well, when we were kids, media kind of trickled in through TV, bad Star Trek reruns, whatever it was that you were watching. And nowadays, it's just this fire hose of information. God knows, like, what's coming into the house. How justified are those concerns, and what are parents supposed to do about it?
You know, I think the irony of all of this is that we don't appreciate what we had 30 years ago and the kinds of freedoms and flexibility that we had to be a part of public life. This technology is coming not as a thing that is the attractor, but as in many ways the thing that is the relief valve. So 30 years ago, we generally could get onto a bike and be home by dark, and it wasn't a big deal. Today, I would interview people, in fact, a young woman in Seattle who said to me, you know, I would love to hang out with my friends in person, but I'm not allowed to. So the reason I go online is because it's the only place that I can see my friends. And indeed, this is really the thing that has changed over time, which is that, you know, we have curfew laws. We have regulations about where young people can hang out. Malls block them. We have limitations on their ability to get around in public. We have fear. We have a response to, you know, latchkey culture that resulted in, you know, very overstructured lives, especially of middle and upper class youth. All of this is piled on. And so that the reason young people turn to social media is they turn there to hang out, to socialize with their friends. And most of what they're doing is the stuff that we did when we got on our bikes, except today they're not sneaking out as much.
So why is the solution more technology and parents kind of figuring out how to navigate that, and not just less technology and let's get kids out building forts on their bikes into the real world? Or is that just impossible at this point?
I mean, I'm a big fan of that. I strongly believe that it would, you know, be helpful to most youth if they had a lot more freedom. But it's a collective action problem. And I think that's where it's, you know, the reason I wrote this book is to spark that conversation. Because I'd, you know, run into this, you know, I think about this one mother that I met. And she, you know, she had allowed her daughter to be really free. And she was really excited about it. And then she found that her daughter stopped being invited to birthday parties, stopped being invited to people's homes, because she was seen as the risky, dangerous child. And she found herself having to implement restrictions on her child's life so that she was a part of a social world. And so this is where it becomes a challenging issue. Is I'm not convinced that the technology is where we should be having our entire youth culture, but I'm confident that, you know, this is a relief valve of a system that we've created. So if we want to address it, if we want to untangle it, we have to step back, look at what's going on, look at what young people are trying to achieve, and appreciate them.
I have just about a minute left or less, but I'm wondering what your kind of science fiction goggles say about the future of this world for teens. What's it going to look like in 10, 20, 30 years?
I mean, I think that they will still be really engaged around, you know, communication online. I think my biggest concern is that we'll start to see increasing levels of inequality around these issues.
How so?
For starters, who you are online is with the people that are like you. And what ends up happening is that we've created gated communities offline. We're reproducing them online. We are fearing others. We are fearing difference. And we've seen these rise in hatred and distancing. And rather than seeing technology as bubbling up and making visible young people who are vulnerable, we spend all this time blaming the technology rather than using it as an opportunity to make a difference in people's lives.
Dana Boyd, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Her book is It's Complicated, The Social Lives of Network Teens. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Steve Scheer. I'm David Hyde.